Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 27th. I'm John Gibson, and joining me after a great weekend of MPB baseball action is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, I'm a little perturbed. I mean, I'm fine, but I'm perturbed because the balance of NPB's schedule, whoever made the schedule, was not thinking about us. And I'm offended. Yeah, exactly.
Because, so wait a minute. You. This is the thing that I usually do, and you're pulling a John here.
Well.
I like that. You've
been a John long enough. I got to be. I'm this close to being a John because my father was John and I was born on the same birthday. But I only got the Patrick side. I didn't get the John side. So
okay,
so cut me some slack, Jack.
Cut.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, you know, we went through a stretch of about 2 weeks when there were very few games within our reach, within travel distance here of within an hour of our homes. And
correct.
Then this weekend, the only out-of-town games are in Sendai. And
yeah.
Everything else, yeah, I mean, they're playing in Yokohama, they're playing at Jingu, they're playing at Tokyo Dome, they're playing in Chiba, and they're playing it up at MetLife, the dome formerly known as Prince.
Around the corner from me, yes.
Exactly. So it's like, come on, get your stuff together, dudes.
Yeah, man, spread these things out.
There should be games in Kanto every single weekend.
True.
Every single weekday that there are games, there should be some in Kanto.
True, true. In fact,
listen.
Go ahead, rant.
Exactly. I'm done. So otherwise, I'm fine. Now that I'm Jim again, I'm fine. The John bit was a little uncomfortable, but, you know, I appreciate your bearing with me.
Hey, never uncomfortable here, man. Never.
Okay, so we got a great show coming up, man.
All right, yes, indeed. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Deontay Heath of Cebu. We're going to discuss the Lions, talk about the landmark Carter Stewart signing by the Hawks, and we've got mini tracks and some notes, too. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went to MetLife Dome on Saturday. That's yesterday for you and me. And talked to Deontay Heath, the reliever with the Lions. Now, Deontay, we had him on the show, I believe, last year. I think
yes.
You did the interview with him once he came back to NPB. And he was originally with the Carp, and he left them in 2015. I don't know if left them is the right phrasing, but okay.
I think they left him.
It didn't work out anymore. And he returned to Japan to play in the Indy League with the Toyama Thunderbirds, and that was last year. And then, I guess in the middle of that year, the Wikipedia page said traded, but I don't think that's possible. But
well, you know, that's because in Japan, any players who move are technically traded, even though when they're traded for nothing.
Even when they're traded for not even cash.
Exactly.
Or cash considerations. I know that guy, too. So, anyway, he joined the Lions. I guess it was mutually beneficial for them because he helped them in the bullpen, and he got back into NPB, and he's with them again this year, and he's doing fairly well. Now, he said he had a nerve issue in his neck after about the third game of the season, and that's why he got deactivated and we didn't see him for a little bit of time there. But he has come back and he has been pretty effective since his return. He's one of the few guys with an ERA under 3 in that bullpen, so that's really good. And we talked along the third base line at MetLife. I always want to say Cebu Dome, but I'm going to correct myself and say MetLife Dome. And I tried to sneak a fastball in there during the interview, and he hit it. He hit it hard. And I always say on the show that these players don't want to give away secrets, and he was quick to stop me and say, no, that's a secret. That's, you know, that's industry stuff. I'm not going to give you that. But we did have a nice talk, and then we followed that up by talking for about 20 minutes right there on the field, about things including Carter Stewart and the deal he did sign with the Hawks, And also about Deontay talking about his child ceremony that he was able to see online. So we had another podcast chat that's not going to be on the podcast, but it was really good fun. But I think those of you who have heard Deontay on the show before know that he's a little bit taciturn, but a good guy. Mm-hmm. But in this interview, actually, we got him to talk a little bit. So let's take a listen. All right, we're sitting with Deontay Heath of the Cebu Lions here at MetLife Dome. Now, how you doing, man? It's good to see you.
Doing good. How about yourself? Good to see you also.
I'm just getting old.
It's a good thing.
All right, so you joined the Lions from an Indy League team last year. So how was it being in camp this year and starting the whole program with the Lions this year?
I mean, I feel like I had like an advantage because I met the guys last year, so it was like, you know, first day of school, seeing all your friends again this year in spring training.
Now, what was your role coming into the season, and what is it now?
Just pitch whenever my name is called in the bullpen. That was like my mindset going into spring training, and still the same thing now. So whether it's in the 6th, 7th, 8th, or the 9th, just be ready.
All right, now, what's the difference in pitching, let's say, early in games or maybe in the later innings, and then getting those last three outs in the ninth?
Mentally, it's all the same, you know, just get three outs as quick as you can. But if you go in early, you know, you got to get more than three outs. But that's the thing, just throwing strikes, strike one, still important no matter where you're pitching at in the game.
You know, they make a big deal of closing. Compared to being set up guys like 6th, 7th, and 8th inning guys, and how that ninth inning is just special. Why is it so special?
Just because you're getting that last out of the game, and, you know, and everything is on you, basically.
Now, your guys, your closer, Tatsushi Masuda, I'm just wondering, have you ever seen him upset or excited or rattled or any emotion from him?
You see some time to time in the bullpen, but on the field, he's still the same guy. Just calm and bullpen, jokes around a little bit with the guys.
Okay, because I mean, I've been calling him the robot because it seems like nothing that happens on the field phases him and makes him change his facial expression. Maybe sometimes, but very, very little. How much is that part of the closing process, you know, throwing that ninth inning?
I think that's a big part. Just still being the same guy, keeping your composure on the mound no matter the situation, and still having that confidence in yourself and your stuff.
All right, now this team is just killing pitchers, making guys, you know, shake. I'm sure keeping them up at night before they face them as starters. But after a series with the Lions, it seems like they're relieved and they think that they can just use two or three pitchers to get through a game. You guys are just wearing them out. Now, what's the biggest thing you see about this lineup and its ability to produce runs?
I mean, ever since I got here last year, man, they were putting up hits, putting up runs, and I've been seeing the same thing this year. So they're just consistently swinging it. You know, you still have your ups and downs, but that's when the pitching kind of steps in and help out a little bit, take some pressure off.
I'm looking at Hotaka Yamakawa, and, you know, he's got the leg kick and the hitch and all this stuff going on. And I'm just wondering how you think that would play in the United States if he were to go there.
I mean, that's a question. A lot of guys ask that question, but, I mean, I feel like if you hit here, you can hit anywhere. You still got to see the ball, hit the ball.
How much do you think that, I mean, those mechanics, do you think that he'd be able to catch up with some of the fast stuff? I mean, how would you try to get him out?
That'll be a secret because I might have to face him one day.
That's true.
I don't know. I think he'll still have to make some adjustments, just like, you know, for the guys coming from the States have to adjust to the MPB league. So I think it'd be minor adjustments, but I think he can make those adjustments when needed.
Okay. Now, obviously, your team has a high ERA. The starters, from the starters to the guys in the bullpen. Not you, actually. Yours is under four, so that's good. But is pitching, I mean, do you guys feel a lot of pressure to get these outs? Or do you just not worry about it because the offense is so good?
Don't worry about it. Like I said, you just try to go out and do your job. And some days, you know, we might give up 10, but we score 11. And some days we might, you know, have a shutout, we score one run. So just have his days. But last year, you know, we had a pretty high team ERA, but we won the, you know, the league. So, you know, it just depends on the day.
So yeah. Take that, y'all. That's what he means. Well, how do you feel about the pitching staff?
I mean, we're just trying to get better every single day. And just like, you know, baseball, you know, you have your days, your good days and bad days.
What are the coaches, or what are they like trying to have you guys focus on?
Just getting better every day. Something, you know, is just different things that we work on, and just trying to be consistent in a good way.
All right, now, how do you feel about the rest of the PO? It looks like it's going to be tight races the rest of the way.
I looked at it a couple times, but I try not to look at it because it's still kind of fairly early. But I did remember last year when I joined the team in May that they were in first place, and if I'm correct, we didn't come out of first place. And like right now, playing good ball. I think the last 10 games we've been playing pretty good, so we can just keep that up. And I feel like we haven't got hot yet.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's, I mean, not like the carp. Not like that.
I actually pay attention to the carp also.
I bet you do.
That's a history.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, now you guys are going to start interleague pretty soon here. So you pitched against the Central League for a while. Are you still familiar with a lot of the hitters, and what do you think of those guys?
I'm not familiar with many of them. I do watch the game.
It hasn't been that long.
We've been playing in Mexico and everywhere else and getting mixed up. But I watch some of the games on TV, you know, the night games on Sundays, stuff like that. So I'm familiar with some of the hitters. And I think there are great hitters over there also.
So how do you get prepared for those guys?
For me, it's still the same thing. Just strike one, you know, get ahead, stay ahead.
Do what you do.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about them.
I would say early on, just focus on ourselves and what we got to do.
All right. Well, the Pacific League seems to finish atop the interleague standings every year. So you played in both leagues. What's the biggest difference you see?
It's just any given day, honestly. You know, good pitching still beats good hitting. At the end of the day,
it ain't every given day, man. They've been beating up on the Central League for years.
But I think last year the Central League won, right?
No, Swallows. No. Oh, you're talking about at the very
like the most wins.
The most wins? I don't think so, but I'll look it up. I don't think so. It's been a long time.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll try to make sure we win it this year.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
All right.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, so, yeah, he is right. Thank you, Deontay. He is right. The Swallows did finish on top of the standings last year. I don't know how I spaced that. I was more focused on the fact that it was the Pacific League that won 59 games and the Central League that only won 48. So I was looking at the overall domination. He was looking at the top team. All right, that makes sense. It's a competitive situation. So
it sounds like you're playing horse or something. You're I got one, you missed one. Okay.
So it was the Swallows. They indeed did finish on top of the standings last year. So anyway, what was the thing that rolled around in your head after you heard this?
Rolled around in my head. I shudder to think.
You know, next to the rocks.
Your graphic conception of my cranium here. Well, first of all, yeah, great stuff. It was a taciturn for the better.
Oh, and you broke the drum set with that one.
I apologize for that one. But anyway, you got a lot. You laugh at him, which I love. That I think that I thought that talking about Tatsushi Masuda. You showed your lion's chops on that one. But I think two things I want to talk about is, one is his, you know, when he said, you know, what do you work on, and getting better every day. Okay, that's straight out of Zealous Wheelers, just trying to get better every day. Okay,
yeah, well,
which I like.
Of, you know,
I have no problem with the guy trying to get better every day. This is what human beings do. But what I want to know is, what does it mean to you getting better every day? And I've asked Zealous that, and he says, well, you know. And I say, okay, no, I don't. That's why I'm asking. And then when you ask what the coaches, okay, so what do the coaches try to work on? And they just want us to be better every day. So I had this image in my mind of the coach, you know, taking a whiteboard out to center field, you know, with a pointer. And say, you know, the coach comes out, puts his reading glasses on, you know, and he says, okay, guys, listen up. Some of your sliders have been backing up, so we're going to work on that today, okay? Okay, everybody, pitching hand out, slider grip ready.
It's Japanese, so they all do it together.
Exactly. You know, and if it's a little bit like Mr. Baseball, if he said stand on your left leg, they'd all do that too, you know. So, but I don't know how, but I'm curious. I really want to know what that entails when they say you know, something like that. I mean, give me a concrete example so we can visualize. We're not ball players. We don't know. We haven't been there. That's why we ask. So that was one thing. And the other one, which I thought was a very elegant explanation. Mm-hmm. When you asked, you know, because this one required a little archaeology on your part. You know, dig, 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 take out the toothbrush.
I wonder where you were going, archaeology.
And that was, what's the difference between pitching in middle relief and pitching in the ninth inning?
Hmm.
And, you know, and the first answer is, of course, the answer is there's no difference. I'm always the same. But, you know, in the end, he kind of, you wore him down.
Came back with it. Hey, look, they tell you that pitch doesn't work the first time. Throw it again properly. Execute it the next time.
Okay, well, John executed the pitch. And, you know, and he said, you know, you're getting the last out. And to me, that really rang a bell, because it's not that the out itself is harder or more, in any sense, more significant, except mm-hmm. that if you don't get it, if you make a mess in the ninth inning, sometimes there may be no chance for anybody to clean it up.
Right. I think
the game might be over.
Yeah. He the way he phrased it was, it's all on you.
Exactly. Because normally in a team sport, there's somebody coming up after you. So if you're the last batter or you're the pitcher in the last inning, it's you do it or you don't do it.
Correct.
And so it's very subtle, but it changes the dynamic of being a team game to being more on you than normal. So I really like that.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
How about you?
No, for me, I'm going to go with one thing, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, so I don't want to drag this one out, but this interview out too much. But I liked it because, like I said, he usually, I remember the first time I talked to him, the answers were, I mean, it caught me off guard, because he's such a nice guy, and we talked actually before I turned the tape recorder on, and to find out that he's just not, some people are just like that, they don't add a lot of color to it, and so that's fine. But I thought when he smacked my little fastball that I tried to sneak by him and said, no, I'm not going to tell you about Yamakawa because I might be facing him one day, hinting that he might have a career, you know, longer than we, you know, he's planning to have a long career here, but then he added the fact that he said a lot of people have asked him about Yamakawa hitting in the States. And for that, it rang a bell, and that told me that naturally there's some serious interest from MLB teams about Yamakawa, which makes sense. It really makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I thought about that too, but you know, what I'm thinking is the talent is absolutely there. And I was thinking about, it's a long story, but I was thinking about that today, actually. The talent is absolutely there. This is a guy who could definitely play in the majors right now if, you know, make adjustments, but he certainly got the talent to play. The problem is, by the time he's ready to get close enough to free agency that he could ask the Lions to post him, he's going to be like 32 years old.
Well, you said the same thing about Yuki Yanagita. My response was, yeah, well, we don't know when he's going to peak, and maybe when he goes over there, they get him into a little bit better shape. He's still got some, I wouldn't say junk in the trunk, but he's got some stuff in the oven. So
okay. he can. I'm not going near the stuffing now.
Right, yeah. So I just think he still has, you talked about earlier this year about Ichiro Suzuki maxing out. He can't max out with workout plans. He can't max out with diets. He can't max.
I think certainly somebody, Yamakawa, yes, could be in better physical shape, although he's fighting, you know, obviously you look at him and you know he is what he is. Well,
exactly.
Having said that, he's a guy who doesn't lift weights. He's all a body. He's a prototypical Japanese body weight guys.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely room for improvement.
Right.
Whether he goes that way or not.
Right.
I don't know.
So, yeah, we don't know, obviously. And he might go and say, hey, look, we might hear the talk after this season. Hey, Yamakawa is talking about wanting to be posted. And again, they won the league last year. And we'll get to the standings shortly here, but they can win again. And if they do that and they actually get to the Japan Series, I think, yeah, he will be able to bring that kind of table.
What I would recommend is for Yamakawa to work out with Yu Darvish. I know Yu Darvish usually works with pitchers, but he's also, he's a very outgoing, Darvish that is a very outgoing guy, and he would be, he really wants to help people who want to improve. And, if he worked out with Darvish, if he had that connection, and maybe Hideaki Wakui's got that connection, since it used to be me and Darvish, that would be great, because Yamakawa is a guy. We're suddenly talking about Yamakawa instead of Dante Heath of the Lions, but Yamakawa is a guy who he takes on these projects, and he's really dedicated, and he's really focused. In November he told me the thing. Last year he said very few of the home runs I hit squarely. He said it maybe
he's scuffing the ball over the fence here.
Yeah, exactly. I was mishitting a lot of balls, and so he was using the major league the visiting major leaguers series as a way of exploring ways to make better contact, and that was sort of his off-season project. After that was, I want to come out next year and make better contact, because I think I can hit more home runs if I make better contact. And speaking of which, through Sunday's games, he has 20 through 47 games. He's on a pace right now to hit 61 this season.
Yeah, after today?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, because I heard the other day he was on pace, and this was this past week, so they said 66 or so.
He hasn't hit one in 3 days.
So. Yeah, that is messing up.
He hasn't hit one since. He hasn't hit one since when? Since Tuesday.
Okay. So. Yep. Well, but thank you very much to Deontay, and it was fun to talk to him about the things that we spoke about, and also about Yamakawa. And let's look at the Lions. And so after Sunday's games, now the Lions are basically in third place, and they're 24-22, so only two games over 500. But I think the image of, and I think because of Yamakawa and Takeya Okawari Nakamura, I think we just think, okay, these guys just hit a lot of home runs, and they're basically the same as last year. It's just that Hideto Asamura is gone, and when they're not missing him so much in terms of run scoring, but they are missing his power. And I think, the home runs are a little bit lower than probably I thought they would be when I looked at them. They've got 58 home runs, and SoftBank has 61 to lead the way in the Pacific League. And that's a lot. But the way Yamakawa was hitting, the way Nakamura was hitting, even Shogo Akiyama is hitting some home runs and hitting with some power. And, Mr. Apple Punch Shuta Tonosaki hadn't really been hitting for power recently, but recently he's turned it on a little bit. So they're hitting for power. But again, you talked about the Lions being the evil twin of the Yakult Swallows in the Central League, and that they really put a good at bat together. And that's really what they're doing. They're getting a lot of hits. I'm watching games, and I think I tweeted this before. When the Lions, even if it's, those last nine outs that you have to get and you have a four-run lead, it really doesn't feel like you're up by four. It feels like the game is tied. It's just a matter of time, because there are always like a walk and a home run away from cutting your lead in half. And if they get it to the ninth inning, you're still in that situation where a walk or a single and a home run and the score is tied.
I wonder if, I think it was the Fighters and the Eagles who ran into that buzzsaw last summer, where the Lions, I think, scored 3 days in a row. They scored about 8 runs in the eighth inning. I just wonder. I know ball players like to put that stuff, bury that stuff in their psyche, where Sigmund Freud couldn't get to it. But I wonder if that left a mark on some pitchers.
I bet it has. And I mean, Tomoyo Mori, who he's leading the league in hitting, At 342 after Sunday's game. So I think that's what we're seeing. You know, Akiyama's at 323. You know, they're just tormenting pitchers in the Pacific League. And I fear for these poor little Central League teams and what they're going to try to do. I mean, I counted up the pitchers for the Fighters in this weekend series because I did mention that to Deontay that, you know, these teams, they know they're going to have to use a bunch of pitchers to get through the series. And then they get out of that series, they figure maybe we can have a game where we just have two pitchers or three. They had 14 pitchers throw over the weekend in this in this three-game series. 14!
You know, it was the Fighter, so you know you know one of them's going to get a short hook. Well, and of course the guy...
Yeah, but 14, that's a lot. I don't care if you have an opener.
Yeah, for three games, that is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and, you know, I'm looking at Nakamura and I'm thinking, okay, here's a guy probably I was sleeping on a little bit because he's getting older. And it's just, with older players or aging players, it's really hard. It becomes increasingly difficult, I think, to predict the kind of production you're going to get from these guys. And he's running well. I've seen him.
He was running well last year. I mean, No, he doesn't look thinner. He did last year. I thought last year he took off some weight. Right. And he looks about the same this year. But he looked agile at third base, which is something I think what that tells me is his knees are healthier.
Right. He's always had knee and shoulder and all kinds of issues throughout his body. And now he just looks really strong. I think part of that is I think manager Hatsuhiko Tsuji is just really doing a really good job in managing his workload. In the field. I mean, he's giving him... I mean, you look at the way that they use the DH. They use the DH to basically give a guy a day off from the, from the wear and tear in the field.
And the other part of that is having Tonosaki in the lineup.
And he's such a great tool. I mean, he's really a terrific player. I mean...
Because Tonosaki can play anywhere. I mean, he's a good outfielder. He's a good third baseman, and he's a better... Well, I think he's a better second baseman.
I like him at second,
He's a better second baseman than Asamura, and I think he will be. I don't think he is now.
Yeah.
The Lions' middle infield defense is a little... Looks like they haven't been playing together a lot.
Well, I talked about that with Deontay. Now, it was off the record what he said, but I'll tell you what I said. And I said, look, I look around at this defense and I don't really see any elite defensive players. I see a good defensive player in Genda, Sosuke Genda at short, probably a little bit better than average in center, but that's only in the range. I think with Akiyama, he doesn't have an above average arm. He doesn't really have above average speed.
I'm
just telling you what I've seen and what I've heard.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the Twitty-its say out there, I know what
I think
so.
His range is a huge question for me right now. I think he is definitely. I almost wonder if he has. Somebody tweeted something about that used that word elite that was bandied about and this and that, and I saw that Twitter exchange. But the point was, I'm not going to pretend like I watch every game, and I'm also not going to pretend that people who do watch every game know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say his numbers have not been, they're declining. They've been in decline for several years. And I did an interesting analysis last year of how often, and now it's one of these open-ended analysis because you're looking at we don't have Statcast to measure his
range.
And his breaks and his how easily he's tracking the ball and optimal routes and whatnot.
We don't have that,
so we're looking at things like I looked at things like, okay, how often do runners take extra bases on singles hit to him? Now, we don't know. You don't know, A, who the runner is in that analysis. You
correct.
Don't know the quality of the
ball's batted
hit
ball,
or where he's playing.
Or where he positioned when the ball started.
But
that's right. Yeah.
This is what the numbers looked like last year, and I compared the two top center fielders, him, Akiyama, and Yuki Inagita, and it. I don't think there's really any doubt that Yanagita's got a better arm.
Oh, no doubt.
Okay. Akiyama's is adequate. It's decent.
Sure.
I think he makes up for, you know, he uses his body well when he throws, but I think he's but my well, as soon as I saw the tweet saying, you know, and then the tweet came, I think a day after, the same day, he just missed a ball in the outfield. And I've seen at least two plays where he looked like he lost the ball in the lights.
Correct.
Least, you know, that's how
or
it
just
looked.
Just lost the ball. Yeah, just
yeah,
was tracking
exactly.
it.
And a couple of balls where
there was one this season where it just landed behind him. He completely
he's
lost it.
I wonder if he's having vision issues.
That's what
actually.
I was thinking too. Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Because I don't think he's, you know, and he was an elite outfielder for about 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that now. No, so anyway, that's just my analysis.
Yeah.
And you guys who do watch the Lions every day, I appreciate the input.
Yeah, I mean, I watched him over the years, you know, take some poor routes sometimes, some circuitous routes to balls, and I don't see him as an elite center fielder, but that's fine. I'm looking around that whole defense, and I joked with Deontay. I said, you guys with the Lions, you're throwing all this analytical stuff, it seems, out the window. You don't care what the defender looks like, what his range is, how old he is, or anything. You guys just put people out in positions and you want runs. That's what it looks like. That's what it really is, what it looks like. I mean, I know, I was out there,
I think,
early
I mean,
on,
and of
on
course,
Saturday
I think
morning.
you could have an exception for, I think you could make an, I think you could have an argument that Genda is not an elite.
You know,
defender.
Yeah, I don't know if he's elite. He's borderline because he makes some of these poor throws on occasion, or he doesn't make a play. But I think in general, he's making, what is it that Tony Barnett told us one time on the show? He said, look, I want a guy who makes all the routine plays. And if the guy can do that, let's start there. And then after that, if he can get you a few extra outs here and there, good. And I think Genda is good.
Well, you know, I kind of like the idea, you know, his defensive numbers are very similar to Josuke Kikuchi's in the sense that he's doing stuff at shortstop that nobody has ever done before in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You talked about all the outs that he
yeah, how's that? Okay. Yeah. Now there again, like the other, you know, the other analysis, there are other things, there are other components to that equation, but you know, when Genda has had two amazing seasons back to back, and Kikuchi had three amazing seasons where you know, I think there was, I forget the number of, I think he had 400 assists at second base, and he was only there were only two second basemen in history who had more than 400, and he had three of those four.
Correct. Yes, I remember that.
So, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of noticeable. You know, it's like the guy who has a 1400 OPS in the minors and people telling you, well, he's not really a good hitter. And I'm going, okay, well, I'm saying you're not seeing, something is not being seen, because there's something there that we were not putting our finger on properly. Anyway, so that's my take on Genda. So
yeah, I like him.
I think it's open for argument, of course.
Sure, I definitely put him above average. I'd have to watch him more on an every play basis to say if he's elite or not. But I tend to lean towards.
I'm going
to
tell you, watching him every day, you still won't know because you can't watch him. You can't watch him more than he plays, and the guys just don't make enough plays to know, you know, to really know you'd want to see him play, make 1,000 plays a year.
Okay. Well, getting off of him, guy I really like, and I think you mentioned him either last week or the week before, is Takumi Kuriyama. And I think he's a guy a lot of guys target, you know, if he's in the lineup, you know, let's pitch to him. Because we don't want to mess with these other guys. Let's go after him. And so here's what you do. Here's what happened. You think you've got your plan to get him out, and you throw a couple pitches past him and, okay, everything's working. Let me just execute this last one and get him. And he fouls this off and he fouls that off. And now you're confused and he knows exactly what you're going to do. And bam, gapper or a home run or something. And the Lions beat you. That's what Kuriyama does for you.
The man definitely has a plan.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, you know, I just think they don't worry about the defensive side as much, and they just worry, just like Deontay said, he actually even said it. He said, look, we know where, he didn't say these words, but he said, we know we're a hitting team. We as the pitchers, we just want to help out once in a while when we can. But if we win 11 to 10, that's the way we win. So they know what time it is out there, Tokorozawa. And they just want to get runs, and they're really good at doing it. And I threw out, once they won the league title last year with a +4 ERA, I decided I would shut up about that stuff. So
we didn't want to hear Silent John. I think that's an oxymoron.
Yes. Unless you're listening to me breathe. Now the rotation, that has been a problem all year. Shinsaburo Tawata, one of the guys whose name is my favorite name to say in NPB. He's a fourth-year guy, and he's still going through adjustments and not really having a good season this year. And I saw him the other day. He was walking, and you know how they work out in center field, and they come back and go into the locker room. And he just kind of... He just didn't look like he had any energy. He was just kind of depressing. That was the day he was starting. He got knocked around.
That was the day he was starting and the day he got sent back to the minors.
Right, yes.
Of course, the good thing about getting sent to the minors at Cebu is it's just on the other side of the ballpark.
Yeah, you don't have to move or anything. Yeah,
exactly.
No taking a train or a bus somewhere else. So anyway, he's got some things to do. But the kid who threw today, Wataru Matsumoto, I think I read somewhere in March or April that his debut was going to be a point of interest for the team. And he has done okay. I think he won his first. He beat Oryx, so I'm not really giving him any props for that. And he was in line to win today against the Fighters, but the bullpen blew that. So he's got one win. He pitched okay. He just hasn't pitched deep into these games. But he's first year guy as well. So they just, the bullpen and the rotation, they're like a ballpoint pen you buy at the store, those cheap ones, and you buy a whole bag of them, and you have to keep buying new shirts too because, you keep putting them in the pocket, the breast pocket of that shirt. They keep leaking on the shirt, so you gotta buy, a new shirt.
Okay.
They're leaking all over the place.
Yeah,
so.
That's what's pretty happening. Accurate. We've seen these guys come out, and the Lions have enough. They're I'm going to go back to the Swallows. They're the kind of team which, they got a lot of guys to throw at you, and they're good enough that they give you hope that they're not going to give up six runs every game.
Well, here's what I think when I see, not every pitcher on the Lions team, but a lot of guys come out the bullpen, especially in the fifth and sixth innings when those guys come out.
Well, I was talking about the starters, actually, but
It doesn't matter. I mean, they're starters too. Some of them are young, and they just don't have a lot of experience, but, I just think, okay, well, if I'm watching a team that I like and I'm rooting for that team, I have a rooted interest or a vested interest. My idea is I know the batter is going to make contact. I just want the guy the ball is hit to not die and somehow be able to make the play in that order.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of times you just like, Don't let it be a line drive at the guy's head, and please be able to catch it. So that's what I think when I'm watching the line.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you like the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll love jballallen.com. My website is full of writing and research on Japanese baseball. And now, if you subscribe and send me an email telling me you heard about my website on this podcast, I will add an extra month to your regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support, and enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about this big signing. Now, the news started to break on Wednesday night / Thursday morning here in Japan. At least that's when I started seeing the stories. And that was about 19-year-old Carter Stewart, who was planning to sign a 6-year deal with the SoftBank Hawks. And it did come to fruition. I think we ran a story, I think, yesterday. I'm not sure.
Although the numbers are still the ones that were being quoted from sources.
You're talking about salary-wise?
Yeah, the $7 million, 6-year contract were quoted by Jeff Passan in early on.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about the.
Yeah, okay, but I'm just saying. But otherwise, but the Hawks on Saturday confirmed that they had made the signing. So
okay, and obviously it's a big deal. It sent shockwaves through baseball, particularly. A lot of the ESPN radio shows that I listened to, it was on Baseball Tonight, where Buster Olney and Keith Law had a conversation about it. And here's my take on it is many years ago, when I started covering the Dragons, this was 1995, I had a conversation with one of the guys on the international player procurement staff. And basically, I suggested, why don't you guys do something like this? You get a player, a young player, to come to Japan. You spend at least a year developing him on the farm. You get him used to the kind of baseball you play here. And if he's good enough to make the top team, bring him up. And he can spend 4 or 5 years on the top team being productive, learning in a professional environment. And then if he wants to go to the States, let him go. And I think I spoke about this maybe some years ago on the podcast.
Heard that. You have expressed that to me.
And so his response, Mr. Kondo-san, it was Kondo. And his response was that Japanese teams don't want to put money into potential. They want top team talent and immediate production. And so that was 1995. So cut to 2019 and the Hawks. I don't know that they're breaking ground per se, because I think we've seen with the academy that the Hiroshima Carp have, and just the fact that the SoftBank Hawks and the Giants and so we have teams that have three levels. I think that you don't have to go that far, but I just think it's a great move by the Hawks to get a player whom, maybe they can develop, maybe they can't, maybe he'll adjust. This is a difficult, it's not just baseball, it's approach, it's methodology, it's like Jeremy Powell told us once before, forget everything you learned in the States. But a young player can probably forget it and make those adjustments a little bit easier. So it's going to be a fun watch. I don't know. We've seen guys come over here and learn, and then take what they've learned here and apply it in the big leagues. The most recent, I think, is Miles Michaelis. And most of the guys are pitchers, but Miles Michaelis. And then we've got the Ryan Vogelsongs, who did well with the Giants, and Colby Lewis, who did well with the Texas Rangers, and Ryan Brazier, who's doing some stuff with the doing some good things.
It's
with
quite
the,
a long list. Yes. Well, Wade LeBlanc, but, there's well a lot. With the Mariners.
There's a lot. There are a lot of guys out there. So, I heard Baseball Tonight, Keith Law referred to the fact that this story had even come up. Was he referred to it as posturing, or a move by agent Scott Boras as a possible just a way of posturing, because he said that there was another Boras client in 2017 who talked about coming here and then ended up signing with a deal with an MLB team. So I'm excited about it, and I want to see how it plays out as well as everybody else, just like everybody else. But what's your take on it?
Oh, I probably have too many for a 4-hour show like ours.
Yeah, keep it short. You got 5 minutes.
Okay. Succinctly, this is something I've kind of predicted. In fact, if you go onto my website, the subscribers can hear my conversation with Scott Boras about this topic. How come are you approaching Japanese
teams?
Wait,
they can hear it?
Yeah. The audio is on my website.
Oh, I did not know you had audio. Okay.
Yeah. On that one, it's Scott Boras talks about signing U.S. amateurs. and we chatted, and I don't want to spoil it, but it is kind of interesting to hear that conversation. It's about 2 minutes. Anyway, basically, I've been expecting this for a long time, and the reason I've been expecting it is that the U.S. has basically said, well, no one's going to sign our amateurs out from under us. So there's no reason for us to pay anything approaching real value because there's no competitors. We're the only game in town.
So back off.
Exactly.
You non-competitors.
Right. Well, you know, and this started in 2012 with the introduction of the draft signing bonus pools and the slot values for every Major League draft choice, taken in order, in descending order. So basically they're penalizing teams who spend too much money in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, these numbers... Prior to that, now Steven Strasburg was one of two Scott Boras clients, in which Scott Boras said they're interested in going to Japan, but it was nonsense because no Japanese team at that time was going to spend $10 million on
right,
an amateur
on a young player.
Exactly. So there, it was a joke because an MLB team could always pay more,
mm-hmm.
but no, now there's no. MLB has tied its own hands. Okay, so that opened the door for this. And SoftBank has a lot of money, but SoftBank has more than just money. And just to put it very briefly, they have a development system in place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ideally, every Japanese team could take part in the action, you know, because MLB is not willing to pay players anywhere near what they're actually worth. And we know what they're actually worth because until there was a hard cap on international free agents and amateur players were getting $26-30 million
right
to sign.
And if I might interject quickly, just really quickly, I remember the first time you and I on JBW spoke about the draft here in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and we discussed competitive balance versus what its mm-hmm. purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me, and I didn't realize that until you said it, but that the drafts were actually created to take away the rights of the players.
Sure.
And it looks like Major League Baseball has just tried to draw a circle around each player.
And
trap them. And
exactly.
this is a breakthrough, hopefully, where these kids can have more control. So I just wanted to add that.
No, that's absolutely right. And of course, the competitive balance is a byproduct of that,
mm-hmm.
of giving everybody limiting players access to the market. Anyway, moving along to make this really short. So SoftBank is perfectly poised to do this. They have the developmental setup. They've got a ton of money. They've got a ton of patience. They got everything
yes.
you need. Other teams. First of all, you need a lot of money, so that leaves out every team basically that doesn't own its own stadium except probably the Yomiuri Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You need a lot of patience, and that leaves out most teams as well. You
right.
need a development system in place, and that leaves out most teams. Maybe the Hiroshima Carp will go in there, but there's lots of other things in place. Now the question is what's going to happen next, and I don't want to speak for MLB, but And people were tweeting at me and saying, you know, when is MLB going to close this loophole? Well, it's a good question, but it's going to be interesting how they could close it because, they could, I don't want to go into, you know, it's on a speculate a long while. Now, they could come up with a solution, but it seems to me the real solution is going to be in the next CBA with the players union saying, well, you know, the way to fix this solution is to pay minor league. Now, all the time, MLB and the players union have said minor league baseball players aren't our problem. So let's pay them a dollar a year. I'm almost not joking.
Maybe two if they're lucky.
$1,100 a year.
Yeah.
$5,500 a year.
That's not enough to feed a pet.
$5,500 a year. I mean, this is what they make, and that And that's before all the money that comes out of their pockets from being minor league players and playing for free in spring training and in the fall league and buying their own equipment and you name it. So it's a hand-to-mouth existence. And if they want to keep players out of Japan, they're going to have to. I mean, I know the first thought for MLB will be, let's screw the posting system because we need to screw Japan.
They can't screw it anymore.
Well, they'll threaten to. We're going to threaten you. We're going to threaten you because that's what MLB does. They're bullies. They're basically bullies, gangsters, extortion artists.
Wow.
Okay. I apologize. That was too harsh. And the reason it was too harsh is because I don't want to get sued by the bullies, con artists, and extortion artists for being compared to MLB because I'm slandering them by association. Because MLB,
I don't even have a drop to do this. This is the longest high heat in the world.
I mean, those, you know, gangsters make MLB look good.
Oh, no. Hashtag
high. No, they make, I mean, MLB makes, you know, the mafia look pretty good. So,
all right, I'm going to save you from
yourself. So they'll try to bully them, but probably what will happen is MLB will have to do something eventually with the union to raise the value, increase the value of their draft choice, the money going to their draftees and to minor league players if they really want to solve it. But that will be only after they've tried to bully Japan into not doing this. But right now, the way I see it, unfortunately, while I'd love to see this because this is a huge deal, the Hawks can get this guy for much less. $7 million, this guy is worth probably much more than $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
But they can get him for that price. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of value to be had for that, in that gap between what MLB is paying these guys and what they're actually worth. And these Japanese teams could exploit that, but here's the problem. Really, the Hawks are the only team right now I see as being able to exploit that. So it's not going to be like a flood. You know, they can't have a They can't have 20 of those. They can't sign every top draft choice. Although I'm sure Masayoshi Son would like to sign every single, you know, the top 10 draft picks in the U.S. draft.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. If it does work out, I think, you know, the Giants will jump on board. They have a lot of money. I think there are other teams that will actually show an interest. Now, just like you said, it might not be possible, but all they have to do, as Keith Law pointed out, is show a little bit of interest, and that helps the player with the posturing. So they might be able to end up getting more money on the other side.
Well, I think
that just benefits the player. It doesn't really benefit.
It does. It does. It doesn't help Japan, but yes.
It doesn't help Japan, right.
But I see right now, I'll just make it really short. The teams who I think could follow this pattern, if they invest in the development side, would be the Rakuten Eagles.
Okay.
From 2023, when the Fighters open their new ballpark, they'll have a revenue stream. They could do it.
Okay. I was going to suggest the Fighters.
Cebu might be able to do it.
Okay.
I'm not certain they have the patience, but they have and the Giants could do it. So I see four teams. They're all behind the line. They're all behind the Hawks in being able to do this, but they could. If they thought, you know, and the fighters are just ornery enough to try it. I mean, they have a high testosterone level in that organization to do stuff that nobody else wants to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited about him. Hopefully we can talk to the young man when he gets here. And
I was thinking about that June 3rd press conference in Fukuoka. I was calculating the cost of going to Fukuoka, and I've decided against it, but I was thinking about it.
Okay. All right, making a two-seam transition, let's go to our mini-track segment. So, do you know what time of the season it is, Jim?
Yes, John. It's mini-track season.
No, you don't. It's standings time. It's 2 months in. I'm going to look at the standings. And I'm gonna
got it. I see you're going to look at the standings, and they're going to stay in your brain for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to care.
Because that's what I mean. Yeah, you're actually going to care.
I'm going to care. And First of all, let's look at our hot teams and our cold teams. So obviously, this is the easiest mini tracks power rankings will ever do. The Carp, who lost today and didn't tie the club record for 12 wins in a row. They had they were stopped at 11 by the Giants, mm-hmm. barely. They had runners. They had to go ahead runners on base in the ninth inning, but they couldn't get them home. They are 16-4 in May so far, and so they're the hottest. And the coldest team is obviously the Yakult Swallows, who are 5-16 and have lost 11 consecutive games. So that's easy. So that's
I think I'll just throw simple. In the honorary mentions, which is the number two team in the rankings for.
Well, I was going to get to those. The Tigers are 13-8.
Well, I was looking at through the past month, so my numbers are from April 26th.
And the Lions 12-10 and the Marines 12-9. Now,
and also I'm looking at how many. And I also look at how many runs they're scoring and allowing too, which puts Marines ahead of the Tigers.
Yeah, why don't you give that number then?
Okay, I mean I have the Marines scoring 113, allowing 83. The Tigers are 100 and the Tigers over the past month are, and this is unfortunately from April 26th, they're 95 runs and 89 runs allowed.
From April 26th through today's games? Or
through Saturday. Through Saturday.
Okay.
Right. So I'm thinking, okay, that's a problem. And then after the Swallows, which are, of course, dead last, is very close are the Oryx Buffaloes.
Yeah. Yeah, the Buffaloes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next subject after the Buffaloes. I think we've kicked them about as much as we could from last week. So I don't think there's any need to.
I think when you say Buffaloes, it just brings the whole show down. But I did have some numbers.
when he doesn't want to talk about them, he's kicking them.
Oh God. I did see my buddy Alizoda out there tweeting away with his great numbers, and he sent out some numbers. I think through Saturday's games, he said the 3, 4, and 5 hitters have combined for this many home runs. And he ranked all 12 teams.
Oh, interesting.
So guys who bat in the 3, 4, and 5 hole, what team do you think has the most home runs in NPV this season in the 3, 4, and 5 slots?
Darn.
Quickly now.
Rock 10?
No, they are, they are ninth.
Cebu. I don't know.
It's
the
Marines.
Idea.
The Marines have 34 of their home runs have come from the 3, 4, and 5 spot. And then Cebu is next. Cebu is second with 33. But among our power tracks teams, our mini tracks teams, the Carp with just 30. I shouldn't say just, but they're in fourth place. And then the Swallows with 27, and they're in sixth place. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Of course, the Fighters have the fewest home runs with 10 from their 3, 4, and 5 holes. So it's interesting because
not only that, but if that includes today's game, then they're all from Shonagata.
No, this is through Saturday.
Okay, so they 9-9-9-1 because he hit his 10th home run.
Okay, yeah,
through Saturday.
Through Saturday, so yeah, wow, so okay. They're all from him, wow. Well, yeah, there's one other one from someone else, but that's pretty interesting numbers there. The 3, 4, and 5 holds, well, those slots are supposed to generate a lot of power for you, but we're not seeing a lot from some of the teams out here. Chunichi, 12, the Tigers, only 14, Oryx are under 18. They're at 18. So everybody, those four teams or five teams under 20. So that's tough. That makes it tough when you're not generating some power out there. So, the Bay Stars were I guess they had that 10-game skid at the end of April. They steadied things a little bit going into May, but they are not doing that great either. A lot of teams in the middle. Just unimpressive, but hopefully, for me, because I picked the Bay Stars to finish in the playoffs, they can get this thing righted, this ship righted. But so I looked at the standings today, and like I said, I actually cared. that SoftBank was, you know, at 25 and 21, but still, my prediction for the Pacific League was that it was going to be bunched together, and it really is. Even to be honest, even Oryx with their little 18 win total, they're still within shouting distance, let's say, of a playoff spot if you look at the rest of the season, and climbing up six wins or so to get even with Sabres. So we got SoftBank in first place and Rakuten basically with the same number of wins, so in a virtual tie, and then Cebu in third place. So that's how the Pacific League looks. And then with the Carp winning all these games in a row, let's call it peaking early for those who didn't pick them to finish in the playoff. We'll call it peaking early for now. They're looking good. I mean, you know, what can I say? I didn't expect,
you know,
struggle the entire season.
I was at Tokyo Dome. It's the first time I've been to a Carp. I've talked to any of the Carp players this season.
Mm.
And I was amazed by how much bigger Xavier Batista has gotten.
You mean bigger in the arm?
Physically bigger. His chest and his arms.
Chest and arms, okay. The torso.
I went like he's laughing. And one of media analyst who covers the Carp, always sitting on the bench before the game, he was doing like his arm curls to him right after. I said because we speak in Japanese, his Japanese is about as good as his English now, and I said, you got big. And then the guy in the analyst was pumping iron there.
I thought he was doing curls with the analyst.
no, the analyst was pretending to be like pumping iron there.
Oh, okay.
So, but he's really just, the balls are just jumping off his bat.
Yeah, he had a really good series. Yeah, yeah.
I think he's gonna he's gonna do some really impressive stuff in the next couple of years. So,
yeah. All right. So yeah, the Carp in first place, the Giants in second place, 25 wins, and then the Tigers in third place. Mm. And I had them finishing second. Those Carp, I didn't have them up that high. Something's wrong. An algorithm. Michael Westbay, help. All right, making a seamless transition, let's talk about the lone retirement that didn't really come as a surprise, but just the timing was kind of caught me off guard in that respect. And that was Koji Uehara of the Giants, and he, on Tuesday, announced his retirement. And you know, he's betwixt and between in his numbers with the more than 100 wins and more than 100 saves, but not 200 of either one. And he's got the MLB experience. He's got a World Series. He pitched for the Giants. He was a Rookie of the Year here. Sawamura Award winner. It's just, he's got a lot of the, you know, if he was one of the other, a starter all his career or a reliever all his career, he definitely had numbers. Yeah,
that was the classic answer of his press conference, which is also on my website if you want to read. I don't know; it's the entire press conference. I wasn't there, so I had to borrow somebody else's transcript to translate. But the classic answer was, you know, you've got 100. Holds 100 wins and 100 saves, and he says, well, what that means is I had a mediocre career. I wasn't really good at anything.
Oh no.
Which is not true. He was really good at a lot of things.
Yeah Well, my favorite Koji moment is still 1999, the classic. His rookie season in the Giants, that was his rookie season, right?
It was.
And he and the Giants were playing the Swallows at Jingu, and he was asked to pitch around Roberto Pettigini, and he wasn't happy about it. And after a wide ball four, he kicked at the mound, and later he was seen wiping away moisture from leaky eyes. And that was October 5th in 1999, because they showed it on TV this morning while I was at the gym on the treadmill, so I was able to confirm the date. Thank you, Asahi TV or whatever channel it was. They liked that moment as well, I guess. But that's still my favorite moment from him. And, of course, also him, you know, closing out a World Series championship for the Boston Red Sox for the first time in our lifetimes. So those are the things I remember for him. So, yeah, he's... really good pitcher. It's a shame to see him go, but I like what he said. He said, hey, look, if I were to make this announcement, you know, he said he was playing in the on the farm team and he really wasn't getting the outs that he felt like he should be getting or like he should be getting. And for him to make this kind of announcement in September, August, sometime around that time when the Giants are competing for a pennant, I guess the right way to phrase it would be it wouldn't be right or it would be a distraction. Mm-hmm. So he just didn't want to do it at that time, and he decided now was the time to walk away while the team can focus on just going out there and playing. So
yeah, he said he'd been it wasn't just that he wasn't getting outs, but that he felt really good after his knee surgery and he wasn't getting outs. So that was really the key.
And that he was planning to retire after this season anyway.
Correct, right. Yeah. So a number of things there. Yeah. Yep.
All right, and one last note before we go. There's someone you tweeted about, Justine Siegel. Is that how you say her name?
Siegel.
You tweeted about this past week, and she's signed on to coach with the Fukushima Hopes of the Baseball Challenge League. So why don't you tell us about that?
Justine Siegel is a... she's the first woman to throw batting practice to a major league team, first woman to be employed as a coach by a major league team when the A's hired her to work in their fall instructional league. Mm-hmm. And she had been looking around for, she's basically getting a trial here in the next couple of weeks with the Fukushima Red Hopes, who are managed by a former Athletic, Akinori Iwamura. And he was very positive about that, and she's arriving on Wednesday in Japan, and so she's going to give that. She's going to be ostensibly the first woman to coach male baseball players in Japan.
Wow.
So she's had a lot of those firsts. You know, I asked her, you know, we talked the other day, and she said it's like I really can't keep track of them all. And it's not like I'm being arrogant, and then they're all significant in their, you know, each in their own, but they kind of blend in one to the other. So she doesn't really like remember I did this and I did that, but when this happened and when that happened, she's having trouble. But basically she's an activist who's really working to basically get rid of discrimination in sports. I mean, she wants men and women and boys and girls to all have an opportunity to play baseball and, you know, and follow their passions and do what they want. And she's empowering girls and women players, and more power to her.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're talking about. It's just like running the marathons. You don't sit back and think about how great you ran the third kilometer of your 42 kilometer marathon, or you don't stop and think, oh, wow, I did that 10th kilometer really well. I got to go back and do that again. No, you just move on to the next accomplishment. So I totally understand that. Mm. And, you know, I totally agree. I remember running a story probably last year, but someone was talking about the fact that there are going to be NHL officials in the future, in the near future, who are going to be female. And the quote that I remember from that story was, look, you don't have to be a man to be able to raise your arm and yell, and yell off sides. Mm-hmm. So obviously we're getting more females.
We've got a woman coach in the NBA.
Not a head coach, but a coach. Yes.
No.
And we have some in the NFL as well. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no, but it, you know, Japan's a little behind in that respect. But barriers are meant to be broken, and people who are, she was eager to do it, and Mr. Umura was eager to have her, and I'm just really pleased for both of them, and I hope it works great, and I hope that they bring her back next year.
I see what you did there with the hopes. I got that.
I walked into that. The pun was unintended. I apologize for that.
Oh, yeah, I bet you say that to all the guys.
Whenever possible.
All right, guys. No questions this week. We'll get back to the questions next week. Anyone who has a comment or a question or just wants to yell at us, do so on at JBW on Twitter with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN at gmail.com, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.